just wanted to start off the show that way. Make sure you people are paying attention. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. This is the Mike Malloy Show. Brad coming at you live from Dallas, Texas. That's right, AM 1360 Rational Radio here celebrating their last week on terrestrial radio. Unless we can do something about that between here and the end of the week. We're working on it. Any angels out there, we'll take it. I am your friendly citizen guest. What am I? Citizen, investigative journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker. And this week, guest hosting for Mike Malloy, who's enjoying a well-deserved vacation here between the holidays. Wishing you all, by the way, a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year coming up. We're going to try to, let's try to cheer you up here at the end of the decade. That's the least we can do. And, of course, that's why I bring up explosive diarrhea. But I'm not going to run with that. No, I'm not. Not this hour. Don't look at me that way, Des. We'll talk about that later. Maybe. If I feel like it. You know why? Because I am sick and tired of the media out there making heroes out of terrorists, because that's what they're doing by going on and on. Well, you know what? So if you want to talk about that, you can go listen to every other show on the damn dial. We're going to talk about stuff that actually matters, at least here in the first 2 hours. Maybe we'll talk about explosive diarrhea in the third hour, but we'll see if I feel like it. Want to get in on the conversation down here in Dallas? Here's the number for this week only. Write it down. You're going to need it. These are your public airwaves. I encourage you, as ever, to use them. Give me a call, 800-277-1. Do I have this right? 800-277-1637. That's 800-277-1637. Write it down. You're going to need it because you're going to be either so angry or so delighted. You're going to want to call and tell me about it. 800-277-1637. When you call in, you got to hit extension 703. We're trying to make it as difficult as possible as we can for you. No wonder AM 1360 is going off the air at the end of this week. No, they're not. That's not why. They're going to be going to the internets, maybe even to TV. That's what I've heard some rumors about. That said, I want them on terrestrial radio. I want them on the public airwaves. I want someone out there. Is anyone listening to my plea from Dallas? Is anyone out there who can help? Is there anyone out there who can make sure that Dallas has a progressive radio station? Because I'll tell you what, Dallas County has been voting more Democratic than Republican. In these you wouldn't know it, would you? I was listening to another radio station, one that gets to stay on the air. Why? Because it's a wingnut station. And they had an ad with Dick Cheney actually endorsing Kay Bailey Hutchinson for governor. She's running against Rick Perry in the primary. Dick Cheney is apparently an asset to Kay Bailey Hutchinson. I mean, how can that be? There's only 13% of America who actually likes Dick Cheney. Apparently they all live in Dallas. Who knew? I mean, this guy, you know, is like syphilis. I don't want him having anything to do with my campaign. Kay Bailey Hutchinson, apparently she's fine with him. She thinks it's great that he's endorsing her. You see why we got to save Dallas? You see why we came down to the Big D to AM 1360 to host Mike Malloy Show this week? It is, if you want to, we're streaming coast to coast and around the globe, by the way, not just at MikeMalloy.com, but also RationalRadio.org. They are my host here this week. We would love you to hit their website and stream the show there. If you can't get it on your car, if you can't get it on the satellite radio, over the internet, whatever, RationalRadio.org. Go stream it there this week. That's where we're going to be all week long, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. If not longer, we'll see what happens here. And we're glad to have you with us. I am the guy from bradblog.com, in case you don't know. I am that Brad. Yeah, that's me. And we are chatting in the chat room live at bradblog.com. Go to the top item over there. Hit click here for more, and you'll see the live chat room hosted by the lovely Agent 99, who is never, ever cranky at all. Right, 99? Behave yourself. Go on over there. Say hello to her. She would love to see you. Coming up on tonight's show, Igor Volsky is going to be joining me from the Center for American Progress. We're going to actually be talking about things that matter to you. Yes, we're not going to be hiding under the table, frightened of terrorists. There'll be no duct taping of the windows here at the Mike Malloy Show. We're going to talk about stuff that actually matters. Like what? Oh, healthcare. This healthcare debate is unbelievable. On it goes. We've been checking in with our friend Igor whenever I'm guest hosting for Mike Malloy. And throughout this past year, and we're going to continue doing so tonight to figure out where the hell we are. You may not have noticed, but over Christmas, Christmas Eve, I think it was, the Senate got together in secret, according to the Republicans. Nobody knew. No, they had this vote overnight. There was no way the public could know. They got together on Christmas Eve, actually 7 a.m. in the morning in the Senate, passed a historic reform bill in the Senate. Historic because it's taken this long, something like seven presidents, to pass any major overhaul of health care, whether you like that reform of health care or not, actually health care insurance or not. They passed it, and now it goes to a reconciliation committee between the House and the Senate. Well, for all the teabaggery out there, since we're at Rational Radio this week here in Dallas, we're going to be rational, and we're going to figure out just what the hell is in this healthcare plan, what's good about it, what's bad about it, and what it may look like once the Senate and the House get together and reconcile it. Igor Volsky is going to help us. He is the contributor to, to Howard Dean's prescription for healthcare reform, how we can achieve affordable medical care for every American and make our jobs safer. Howard Dean has some opinions about this current healthcare plan. Yeah, we're going to hear about all of it. So if you want to talk about healthcare, 800-277-1637, extension 703. Later on in the show, Frank Schaefer, the former right-wing fundamentalist leader, now a Brad Blog guest contributor, the author of Crazy for God, How I Grew Up as One of the Elect, helped found the religious right and lived to take all or almost all of it back. He's going to be here to talk about a bunch of things, among them his open letter from Jesus. His article, his letter to Republicans asking them why they hate America. And believe it or not, of those two articles that I just mentioned, that's not the controversial one. Perhaps the most controversial article ever at Brad Blog came from Frank Schaefer just a week or so ago. We're going to talk about that. We're going to light the controversy up all over again. I had no idea it would be that controversial. Did you, Dez? I had an inkling, but I didn't know it was going to be that controversial. So we're going to talk to him, Frank Schaefer, about that. We're going to talk to you about what you want to talk about. Have I mentioned these are your public airwaves? 800-277-1637, extension 703, your public airwaves. Use them or lose them. The folk down here in Dallas know that too well. I'm sorry to say, here at AM 1360. But we're going to keep fighting for him all week long, looking for angels along the way. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. We're going to be take a quick break here, come back with Igor Volsky. We got a big, big show ahead of you, a big, big week. Like I say, Brad in for Malloy. Stick with us all night.
Rumors spreading around, tonight takes the time. About to check outside the game. And you know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you want to go to that home out on the range. They got a lot of nice girls.
In for Mike all this week. Glad you can join us. We are broadcasting live from Dallas this week. So we have fresh new numbers for you out there. 800-277-1637. 800-277-1637. That's 800-277-1637. Extension 703. You can also join us in the live chat room over at bradblog.com. It's starting to get hopping over there. I'll do my best to keep my eyes on it. But first, we're going over to Igor Volsky, our old friend from the Center for American Progress. And see, these phones are sticking. There we go. Our old friend, he's the healthcare researcher and blogger at Center for American Progress, where he focuses on healthcare issues. He's a contributor to Howard Dean's prescription for healthcare reform, how we can achieve affordable medical care for every American and make our jobs safer. The favorite book for the U.S. Congress to not read at all, apparently. That said, we've been checking in with Igor whenever I've been popping in this year to cover for Mike. It's been great to be able to check in with Igor and figure out where the hell we are. That's what we're doing tonight. Hey, welcome back to the Molloy Show, Igor.
Hey, Brad. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, and a belated Merry Christmas to you.
Oh, you as well.
Or as Bill O'Reilly prefers, I say, Happy Holidays, Igor. Okay, I don't know. I didn't want to talk to you about this beforehand because I don't want to know yet whether you're for it or against it. What I would like to do here is try to put the healthcare bill, now we've got two, and then there was two, one in the House, one in the Senate, put them in perspective, figure out what's good about them, what's bad about them, what we hope might change, whether we can support it, whether we need to kill it, as some have called for, some who I respect, folks like Jane Hampshire and so forth. But I don't know where you stand, Igor. We'll find that out. Let's keep that as a cliffhanger. And for the moment, if we could, for everyone who hasn't been able to keep up with this, including myself, what are we looking at currently in this healthcare package as far as the good things? What is good, if anything, about this package at this point?
Well, the good thing in both bills, the Senate and the House, is the coverage that we're extending to some 30 million Americans. 15 million will find coverage through Medicaid, which is a very good thing. We're expanding a public program, possibly the biggest expansion of Medicaid in certainly its history. And, of course, you have the insurance regulations that they can't deny you coverage because you have a pre-existing condition. They can't rescind coverage once expensive claims start coming in. They can't discriminate based on age more than a certain ratio. So you're putting insurers into this new managed competition environment. You're expanding coverage to millions of Americans. Those are good things. You know, the Senate bill also has what's called the CLASS Act, which is this new long-term care insurance program that you start paying into, and then down the road, if you have some very serious chronic illness and you can't get out of bed and you have to have care around the clock and you need help getting dressed, that kind of care you can afford, so you don't have the situation where very sick people or very old people have to spend all their assets so that they qualify for Medicaid. So there are a lot of good things in this bill. It's certainly not a perfect bill, but you know, if we're going to highlight the good parts, I think we should start there.
Well, we're going to get to the bad parts in a second, but this coverage for 30 million Americans, these are, I presume, coverage for 30 million Americans who currently do not have health care coverage. Will this actually be affordable to them? Is that when we say we're expanding it to 30 million Americans, are they getting it for free? Is it just at a lower cost? How are we expanding it to 30 million Americans?
Well, Brett, that's the big question, the affordability. And, you know, I think one of the mistakes that was made during this whole process is that a ceiling was placed of $900 billion, that the president said he doesn't want to spend more than $900 billion. It doesn't matter that it's paid for. That's the cap. And so it really kind of put the Senate and the House in a box that if they want to expand coverage to everybody and require everyone to purchase it, it's going to have to be affordable. And, you know, the affordability is the big question. So for about two-thirds of everyone in the exchange, which is about 25 million people, two-thirds of those would be receiving government affordability credits. And so they would be paying less for coverage than if no reform occurred. for Americans in the employer market, which is most of us, about 160 Americans get their coverage through their employer, you'll see almost no change. So what you have is kind of a mixed bag on the affordability front. The hope is that with some of the other delivery system reforms that this bill institutes, so changing the way providers, hospitals, and doctors are paid, that in 10, 20 years, prices won't increase as fast as they would if we did nothing. But you won't see any kind of dramatic decrease in price.
Well,
you'll just have...
Yeah, let me ask you this way. If I can't afford health care insurance right now, and I'm one of these 25 to 30 million you talk about who would be able to buy it from the exchange, do we have any, how much will it cost? Will I be able to afford it even under the exchange?
It varies. Under the Senate bill, for a fairly comprehensive policy in the exchange, that's going to run you for a family plan about $15,500 for a family of four. Now, a lot of that is going to be subsidized, again, through those affordability credits. It all depends where you fall in the income bracket, how much you get. If you get cost-sharing protection as well or just premium subsidies, depends on your situation, but it's about $15,000 in 2013, I believe. Of course, as we keep going into 16, 2017, 2018, the price will increase, but again, hopefully not as dramatically. So we're looking at about $15,000 for a family plan, about $5,000-$6,000, I believe, for an individual.
All right, hold the thought, Igor. We're speaking with Igor Volsky. We're going to get that was the good news. We're going to get the bad news and much more after this break. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. Stay tuned.
Make my final stand. Hey, it's why they call me.
The heart of Texas. Well done, Tone. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. We are deep in the heart of Texas, broadcasting from the Big D, Dallas, at AM 1360, rationalradio.org. Brad sitting in for Mike, and we will be taking your calls, 800-277-1637. That's the number today, 800-277-1637, extension 703. We're speaking with Igor Volsky, of the Center for American Progress about healthcare. And, oh, yeah, I should say I got my eye on you, Truth Seekers, over at DU. Just want to let you know, I'm watching you. Be careful what you say. We're also watching the folks at bradblog.com, where there's a chat room. And we are just hitting with Igor. Well, we hit the good points of this bill. And, well, that didn't take long, I'm afraid. Igor, getting a lot of folks ringing in on this over at Bradblog. I'm not surprised. We're going to get to the not-so-good parts of this bill. And let me let the Brad bloggers tell you what they have to say. Let's see. Commenter 4 in our live chat at Bradblog says, the entire affair appears to be an accommodation of the healthcare industry, healthcare insurance industry. I hate neocon says, healthcare at gunpoint is not reform. Barbs says not good enough, Igor. She's talking about the coverage that is supposed to be expanded to 30 million people. Barbs says it's not good enough, not for people who are earning somewhere in the middle of poverty and middle class. They don't get credits, and they can't afford the price as it is now. Is Barbs right, Igor?
Oh, Barbs isn't wrong. I agree. It's not good enough. It's not the perfect bill. It's certainly not the bill that the governor and I were hoping for in the book. We were writing that you need to have a strong, robust public option if you're going to have real health care reform, because that's the only way to hold private insurers accountable. But all that being said, you know, and it's also true, I think, that the bill isn't necessarily, you know, going to give insurers a rainy day. We saw that their stock prices did just fine, although they seem to go down a bit recently after the bill's passed.
Well, it did just fine is somewhat of an understatement, Igor. They were at record levels, the health insurance companies. They hit record levels within the last week or two, I understand.
You're right. So if we're to look at the negative points of the bill, I think starting at the lack of a public option is certainly a very good place to start. And you know, it really at one point you'll remember that they took out the public plan that was in the Senate bill. They replaced it with a Medicare buy-in and some kind of a network of nonprofits that they were going to run. And then Lieberman said,
"No way." And then Joe Lieberman killed that. Thank you.
That's right. Yeah, that came out of the bill, and now we're left with what we have, which is, you know, just kind of a managed competition structure for private insurers, which isn't, you know, great, but again, isn't a total wash, I don't think. So, you know, you look at the lack of a public plan, you look at some of the regulatory problems, just the idea that there's not enough oversight, there's not any kind of new mechanism that's going to make sure that insurers are really held to account, that they that they follow all these new regulations, and you have these exchanges, these new marketplaces, not on a national level like the House bill had them, but on a state-by-state level, that a lot of this regulation will be in the hands of state insurance commissioners, which really don't have a great track record of regulating much of anything.
No, and neither do they on the federal level, Igor. That's what I'm worried about. I mean, even if you put in any kind of restrictions, you know these jackasses are going to get around them. I mean,
I'm there with you. Yep, absolutely.
And I mean, look what they've done. You know, with the credit cards. You know, they brought in bankruptcy reform, credit card reform, and sure enough, before that credit card reform kicked in at the top of the year, your credit card rates went up to, you know, 30-50%. I mean, they're going to find a way around, no matter what, they're going to find their way around these. And that's why I wanted to start with the good side of it, because there seems to be so much downside. And I want to be careful, Igor, that we don't, I mentioned in the first segment that I don't know your position yet on this bill. So I don't want folks who are just tuning in to think that, I got the guy who's supporting this bill, because I really don't know if you support it or not. And frankly, I don't care. What I really care about is, you know, what's good, what's bad. Let the listeners make up their mind. But, it seems to me that we're still counting on this industry, this immoral industry, to behave themselves, to play nice, and if they don't, we're counting on this federal government to regulate them. How's that worked out for you in the past?
Yeah, no, look, absolutely. That's going to be, you know, if we pass, the Senate passed the bill last week, it's probably going to be signed by the State of the Union, if not maybe early February, they're saying. But it's important to remember that this fight ain't over, that you have 21 states on the right who want to exempt themselves from reform by passing constitutional amendments, and then you have certainly a lot of pressure, rightful pressure, I would argue, on the oversight that's going to take place to make sure it actually happens. So we're going to pass a bill, I think. It's not going to be a perfect bill, but we're going to pass something, and hopefully they'll try to improve some things in conference. We'll have very limited amount of wiggle room to improve anything, but hopefully they'll be able to do something and then pass it. And then I think that's when the real work starts, to make sure that we have some kind of strong oversight of private insurers, and to ensure that states don't go a little nutty with this reform. Well, one more thing to add on our negative column, which I'm aware is very long at this point, is the affordability measures are, you know, as I mentioned, are just not very good, not where they should be. The House has stronger measures, stronger out-of-pocket protections, stronger. The Medicaid is expanded towards more people, which is a lot, I think, has better out-of-pocket protections for working-class Americans, and that's very key. That's not in the Senate bill. So you kind of go down the line, and if you compare the House and the Senate, I'm afraid to say that the Senate kind of loses on every single point. You'll remember, of course, that the House bill also has a public plan, which the Senate bill can't even dream of at this point. So that's where we stand. And so the question, I guess, is it worth passing? Is it worth moving forward?
And that's what we want to know from our callers, 800-277-1637, extension 703. Let me get to a call in a quick second here. First, Big Dan, our friend over at Brad Blog in the chat room, says, what everyone needs is care when they need it. What no one needs is insurance, provided care is available when the need arises. The amount of money that would be retained and repurposed by abolishing the insurance sector entirely more than pays for the care that Americans need. Is there, a single payer was not even allowed to come up for discussion pretty much in the House and Senate, Igor Volsky. Is Big Dan right? Is there no need? What the hell is this private insurance industry good for? Anything, ultimately?
Well, the only way you can make private insurers work for you is if you regulate them like utility companies, and this bill certainly doesn't, makes maybe some steps in that direction, but doesn't go far enough. I think the real challenge, though, of controlling healthcare costs is, of course, changing the reimbursement system of how doctors and hospitals are paid, and this bill, again, makes some very small steps in that direction. But even if you were to abolish the insurance industry, you have a one-time savings of, billions of dollars, certainly. But if you have the kind of the kind of growth in costs, which is driven by overutilization, $700 billion in overutilization of unnecessary services, of the technological development, so much technology driving up costs, that it increases at an astronomical rate every year, that's the real problem. So if you were to eliminate the insurance industry, which many people believe is the right thing to do, you still have to deal with these core problems of how the system is established, the very fact that the incentives are just simply wrong. They reward quantity of care, not quality of care. Mm. So you have to have some kind of pairing between regulating the insurance industry and also changing the delivery system.
Let me get to a caller, Marilyn in Berkeley, California, back in my current home state. Welcome to the Malloy Show. Marilyn, how are you?
Hey, good evening. The thing about this awful, I feel sorry for Igor having to try to make sense out of it because
I know.
It's like going into a madhouse.
I know it is.
expecting order and sanity.
Yes.
Well, but my thing with this health care bill is that, first of all, it's tremendously unfair to the point of, I think, criminal, the way they're going to hold up the middle class. Like, we don't care about the middle class. I do, and I'm poor as a church mouse. I care that those people have decent health care and not have to send the wife and the brother-in-law to work just for the health care. But I noticed something I think is a little bit sinister. And that is that a couple of issues that our attention is not supposed to be on right now, which would be insurance, which would be this health care bill, and also the incredible, bizarre slaughter going on in Gaza. And we are asked to turn our attention to some little low-life guy with half a brain left on the airplane with a... Did he have a bomb in his shoe this time?
Okay, all right. Hold that thought for the third hour. We're going to try to open up the lines to anything and everything back then. Thanks for the call, Marilyn. Do appreciate it. And Igor, let's see. How can I phrase all of that in the form of a question? This issue of mandates has come up, and I don't think that a lot of people understand that originally, and help me here, Igor, to make sure that I understand this, but the reason there must be a mandate for everyone to buy in is because if you get rid of the pre-existing conditions stuff that the insurance agency pulls, that means there would be no reason for me, for example, to buy insurance at all until I break my leg, because I know the insurance company can't turn me down because they can't turn me down for a pre-existing condition. Therefore, no one would have insurance at all until they needed it. Therefore, only sick people would have insurance. If you do away with the pre-existing conditions, but don't create a mandate. Do I understand that correctly?
That's right. The only way you can get affordable coverage, the only way you can get the consumer protections that we all want is if you have a mandate. Because if young people or healthy people have no incentive to buy insurance until they're sick, then you simply overcrowd the risk pool with sick people, and there you can't even blame insurers. There, you just have too much money going out in claims, and you have to increase the premiums. You look at the way high-risk pools or catastrophic pools work, in they're about in 26 states now. They work very poorly. They cost a lot of money, both to the applicant and to the states that run them, because they have too many sick people. And so if you want to reach universal coverage, you've got to change the behavior of young and healthy people, and that's what the mandate does, is that it changes their behavior, and if it's structured correctly, it encourages them to buy coverage and to lower the cost of care, and also to get the insurers to adopt the pre-existing conditions and the rescissions and the lifetime limits and everything we're talking about in terms of making sure you have coverage when you need it.
So when people are furious about this mandate, I suppose they have a right to be, that, you know, they could end up, they're not going to go to jail most likely, but they could end up paying a fine. But you can't get rid of pre-existing conditions unless everybody is in the system. It seems to me that this is the great discussion that hasn't been had, the great debate that hasn't been had over this past year, because I think it points up, well, you know, unless you want to go to single payer and make sure that the government, pays for everybody for health care, but you still want to get rid of pre-existing conditions that the insurance companies have, you've got to have this mandate. It puts everybody between a rock and a hard place, doesn't it?
No, it's the glue that holds reform together. You don't have a mandate, and this whole thing falls apart. You want to talk about affordability of care? You know, you think it's bad now, it's going to go out the window.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought, Igor. I got to get to a break. Brad in for Malloy. More Igor right after this. Mike Malloy program live from Dallas, Texas tonight. Brad in for Mike with Igor Volsky talking about healthcare down here at AM 1360 Rational Radio. Log in at rationalradio.org. Trying to be rational here tonight. Just a couple minutes left here, so I'm going to be quick about it, Igor. You said that the mandate is the glue that holds this election, reform package together. And then we had to get to a break. Can you expand on that real quickly, and then we'll try to get in one last call here?
Yes. The mandate, again, encourages the young people, healthy people, to join the risk pools, to buy coverage before they need it. That way they're paying in their premiums, not using anything in terms of claims, and they're financing, if the balance is right, they're financing the care of the sick people. And, of course, once the healthy become sick themselves, they, too, are taken care of. It's how insurance works. It's the only way it works. It's why employer care works so well, because you have more healthy people than sick people, and that's why everyone can pay affordable premiums.
And if we did not, if we did not mandate it, we could not get rid of the pre-existing conditions, things that the insurance companies pull, period.
Well, we could. It would just be completely unaffordable, because if you wait until the very last minute, once you develop something to buy coverage, that means that you weren't paying into the program your whole entire life, and all of a sudden you need care, and so you have a bunch of sick people. It's going to be very hard for insurers to regulate that, to ask them, make sure you have those protections in place, but at the same time, people can buy care whenever they want.
Gotcha. Let's go to St. Petersburg, Florida. PC, welcome to the Malloy Show. You got a very, very quick question for us.
I have a problem with the mandates to buy private insurance. First off, it's going to cost unnecessarily 15% to 30% administrative cost above and beyond true single payer or Medicare opt-in based on your income. And the problem I have with these politicians is they're spending $1.5 million a day in Congress. Since the first of the year, the health insurers and the big health and complexes that make money off the health care of this country, the big money boys. And the problem I have is trusting these politicians. Okay, Ed, you're a smart person. What is going to guarantee that they're going to give us subsidies to people who have bad incomes when these same politicians will not guarantee us job protection in a global free trade environment? They will not go on record. If they won't go on record and guarantee our jobs to pay for it, what's going to guarantee with the country going broke that they're going to keep making the subsidies and guarantee the subsidies writing?
I want to get an answer.
No way to pay for it.
I want to get an answer for you, PC. Thanks for that call. Igor is smarter than me. You got an answer to PC, Igor?
Well, you know, look, the politicians have to be held accountable. There has to be a mechanism in place to make sure the insurers, more importantly, are held accountable and do as they're supposed to under this legislation. And hopefully you'll have some kind of stringent. Because, look, the bottom line is this. You have about 4 years before anything kicks in, 2014. Between then, you have two elections. If the Democrats want to win those elections, want to hold seats, and they're going to push up reforms, front load the benefits at least a bit so that people are seeing the benefits of health care reform. And this is important. They need to make sure that insurers don't increase rates in anticipation of these new regulations. It's what they're doing already, jacking up people's rates before the reforms kick in so they can maximize their profit.
Do you want to see? I got to go to a break. Igor Volsky, thank you. Very quickly, in like 5 seconds, you want to see this thing passed, fixed, or killed at this point?
You know, it's imperfect. Hopefully we'll fix it in conference, but it's either this or nothing. And if that's the choice, I think this provides us a groundwork, a framework from which to build up in future years. It's what happened to Medicare. It's what happens to any large piece of legislation. But if I want to see 23 million people uninsured in 2019 or 54 million if we do nothing, I think I'd be silly to choose the 54.
Igor Volsky from Center for American Progress. Brad, in for Mike. Much more right after this. Thanks, Igor.